Welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Meowlvy. This is your host for today, Becky Friedman, because Sam is taking a little bit of a break. You might have noticed that I'm a little, I don't know, encatted. There's some cacophony here. There was some catastrophes that happened this week with the friends and family and crew of Ask an Atheist. But never fear, atheists and skeptics and humanists and science-minded individuals, because a kitty miracle occurred this week. Hi, Luke. Hi, Nick. How are you guys?
Doing good.
I am doing fantastic. Please tell us about this kitty miracle.
Yeah, not as good and fantastic as the kitty miracle that occurred. It was kind of a tough little weekend last weekend when we, to our surprise, had our beloved pet, one of them, announced to a member of our household in very, very non-confusing terms that something was awry. He did this through meowing loudly and then proceeding to twitch his head with a focal seizure. We promptly figured out that his blood sugar had gotten too low as a diabetic kitty, and we gave him some sugar and some food and brought him into the animal hospital, where they were convinced that someone in our household had double dosed him, because with blood sugar levels that low, that just doesn't happen for, you know, a kitty that's, you know, eating, and maybe he didn't eat enough dinner and he didn't get enough food. Diabetes in cats is not unsimilar, not dissimilar to diabetes in humans. You have to eat regular quantities of predictable foods, you receive insulin at very specific times, and it results in a mostly controlled level of glucose in your blood so that your tissues are able, your cells are able to make use of it, you don't lose weight, you don't gain weight, you know, and everything's all good. This did not happen. If you go to Ask an Atheist, WA, on Facebook, you can see pictures of the kitty in question. This is our beloved kitty, Mr. Adventure. And they were convinced that we had double-dosed him or that he hadn't eaten. No, turns out this is a case of Mr. Adventure and the self-healing pancreas.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm really glad that's happened, because Mr. Adventure is a very, very sweet kitty.
He's an incredibly sweet kitty. And it's just one of those very funny things where, in some cats, you can have spontaneous remission where being on, you know, modern medical treatments can kind of kickstart that pancreas back into gear, have it start producing insulin again, in which case you should stop giving artificially supplemented insulin to your kitty lest they go into a hypoglycemic crisis.
Those aren't fun.
No, they were not fun for us, for our pocketbook, for our weekend, for our kitty, who was quite angry. I mean, I know that when people get hypoglycemic, right, and you get low blood sugar, you just end up feeling really cranky. Oh, boy, was this the case.
Yeah,
this
it is
kitty.
Not fun at all. Very, very uncomfortable.
I'm glad to report, though, that through all of the ups and downs of Mr. Adventure's blood sugar and the ups and downs of actually having it be a little touch and go with a beloved family animal, I did not receive one actual praise the Lord because your cat has survived. No actual proposing that this was a miraculous thing due to supernatural occurrences.
I would definitely have got some of those. That would have happened.
I think my reaction to something like that would be a little more comical. I would probably just say, halitosis!
Well, yeah, after being, you know, 3 days in an animal hospital.
That's the thing.
And eating medicated food. Well, I don't know. He's eating cat food all the time. Of course there's a halitosis thing going on there. Have you guys smelled canned cat food?
Yes, I have.
You said it, not me.
So, I would like to extend my utmost appreciation for hardworking caretakers that execute their jobs on the best known medical practices garnered from scientific experimentation and hypothesizing and case studies and things like that, that has discovered that occasionally a kitty doesn't need insulin. So I'm also glad that the kitty hospital has no pictures of, you know, sort of ghost Jesus hands. Like, have you seen those photos where you have like sort of a painting of ghost Jesus that the hands are sort of like scooping underneath the hands of a surgeon who's
yeah,
doing a major medical procedure?
My favorite ones are the ones where Jesus is being a jerk and the in the memes.
Oh, okay. So those are great. The little tongue-in-cheek ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, all the major hospitals in my area are Catholic at this point. So, yeah, there's definitely a bit of that.
I think about one-third of all Washington state counties do not have a hospital that is not religiously affiliated. So this is not just some idle thing that we're laughing at because, you know, we're happy to have our beloved pet back home. It's a real thing about healthcare and how people react to crisis events with things that are comforting, certainly for some people. If you're religious and you're comforted by the idea that perhaps Jesus is guiding the hands of your surgeon, I mean, that's cool. I would worry that maybe, you know, what if God or Jesus gets a little bit busy, you know, helping one team win a football game or, you know, helping that ninth grader pass his chemistry test or something, you know?
Right. So does God get to choose the team that wins based on the number of prayers he receives?
I really didn't ever understand that. I was not part of a religion that would generally espouse those kinds of beliefs in godly powers. What about you, Nick?
But God works in mysterious ways, don't you know? I'm sorry, don't you know? You have to have that kind of voice when you're like doing when I'm dialing the piety up to 10.
There's a lot of accents that can go along with pious ne'er-do-wells.
I'm trying to do like the more like, oh, I know better than you kind of thing.
You're going straight north central United States.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And probably central Canada as well, too.
Yeah, I can see
that. Ask an atheist listeners if you got a problem with that. Take it up with Nick.
Yeah. Please be gentle.
So I'm quite glad that we're on the other end of this. I will say that the last time we were at the animal hospital, I did walk away with having collected one single chick track. I felt it was my duty to help clean up litter in the waiting room.
This is important.
It wasn't even related to animals or something like that. I was thinking if you're trying to stealthily get people in an emergency veterinary hospital to convert or to pray or something like that. And these chick tracks are very insidious. I mean, they have disgusting messages about what it means to accept Jesus into your heart and then everything will be great and things like that. And they do it through very manipulative ways. I would have expected it at least to involve some kind of, you know, like golden retriever or, you know, something, but no, it wasn't even pet themed.
They're crazy. I've only seen a few of them because they don't really distribute them over in my area too much. When I do, I like to gather them up and put them in my collection, my very small collection of religious literature. They're awful. Like, they're racist and sexist and...
They capitalize on these horrible bigotries that, you know, we would like to strive beyond and transcend as inclusive human beings in a pluralistic society.
So
the illustration quality is just bad.
Oh, yeah. So where have all of you found chick tracks? Because I have found them in the wild in one kind of place.
You talking bus stops?
No.
You talking laundromats?
Public bathrooms.
Ooh.
Have any of, like, those are the only places where I've actually found chick tracks in the wild.
I'm not going to pick up that litter. I'm going to.
Exactly. That's the kind of, and these were like neatly stacked. You know, on the sink next to the soap, and I'm thinking to myself, who the heck would place something like this right here? Like, would they expect someone to grab it and then go into the bog and then, you know, have a revelatory moment while sitting on the throne? Thank you, Jack Chick, or whatever.
Well, they're also likely to get wet or damp. I mean, if it's on the sink, they might get water splashed on, then you don't wait.
Unsanitary.
Right? You got something that's...
There's literally the only place where I've ever found them in the wild was in public bathrooms, but... it's just, there's nothing I want to touch in there, let alone, like, if it was any place other than that, then I would have picked them all up just to throw them away, or put them in the recycling if one was available.
I found them at college fairly frequently.
Oh, yeah. Well, what kind of school did you go to?
TCC and then UW.
Oh, okay. So they're trying to proselytize to the people that they go to the secular school.
Right. This was some time ago. So I don't know what it's like there now.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the fact that it's a state school that said, oh, it's secular and we must convert you. It's that college campuses are a well-known sort of hunting ground, if you will,
right,
for individuals that have coercive and destructive groups. You have a lot of cult and marketing and religious kind of proselytizing that goes around.
That one knife company.
Oh, yeah. Well, the one
that I won't mention.
It's because you have young people generally that are away from home, that are out from underneath their parents' purview for the first time in their life. They're probably living independently, or if they live at home still with family, they're a little bit more independent. They're just at the cusp of adulthood. And it's a real time when people are trying to find their identities, which means that there's ripe fodder for what that identity can be shaped into.
Oh, yeah.
Cough, cough, LaRouche pack.
Those people, there's been several racist groups that have been distributing lately. And of course, again, I have a set of knives.
Oh, you were sucked into several little things before your true identity was formed, Luke.
I keep those to remind myself not to do stupid stuff.
Well done, well done.
I keep my knives in the kitchen because I like to use them.
Well, yeah, they're in the kitchen too, but I have a better set of knives that we actually use.
So when we're looking at outreach and what time that happens and what time of people's lives and where it happens, some of those places, some of those things, like it's very well disguised. I mean, it's kind of obvious when you're at a church that you're going to be proselytized to and marketed to.
Right.
It's completely not obvious that that might happen in a bathroom. That's still getting me. Like, in many of the bathrooms that I've been in just different establishments, there's like resources for, hey, rent this nice dining establishment for your private event. Or things like, hey, do you struggle with drugs? You can call this number. Or do you have domestic issues and concerns? And what does relationship violence look like? Here, you can call this number. Because many times people are in the bathroom away from their significant others or away from people that might be controlling them. But the chick tracks in the bathroom, that's going to sit icky with me for a while. That's going to sit icky with me for a while. That I could handle the bus stuffed in between the bus seats. I could handle sitting on top of the dryers at the laundromat. I could even handle stuffed in between some few magazines in the pet hospital waiting room. But bathroom, that's not going to be cool with me. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, and we'll be back after the break. Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, where you've got me, Becky, and Luke and Nick in the studio today. I want to go to a few local things, at least local to Washington State. A Catholic school in Spokane, Washington, refused an invitation from Gonzaga Prep to allow its students to attend an assembly featuring NASA astronaut and school alumna Lieutenant Colonel Anne McLean because she is gay. Students at All Saints, St. Charles, and Cataldo Catholic were invited by Gonzaga Prep officials, but were left to find their own transportation when school leaders declined to facilitate their students' participation at the assembly. Students of Cataldo, which McLean had attended as a child, had taken part in a video chat with McLean aboard the International Space Station in February before it became known that she was married to a woman. When the revelations of her sexual orientation surfaced this August due to a court filing from her estranged wife, McLean became the first active out LGBTQ NASA astronaut. Whew, what a way to make yourself known as becoming the first of anything. So I give those kind of sympathetic thoughts to Lieutenant Colonel McLean. But looking into McLean's background, she is amazing. She's a freaking amazing person. That would be, I think, any school kids would be honored and delighted to have as an assembly speaker.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, none of that matters because she's gay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like she was planning on coming to the Spokane, you know, Gonzaga Prep Auditorium and talking about what it's like to co-parent a child with a same-sex partner. No, she was going to be talking about what it's like to be an astronaut and
right.
fulfill your dreams and to be an Army helicopter pilot in combat and to graduate from West Point.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people don't like. A lot of people don't think about is that to be an astronaut, you have to be the elite of the elite of the elite.
Yes, they're insanely well trained.
It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of really, really hard work and determination. And I think having an astronaut speak to a bunch of kids to motivate them to do the best that they can is absolutely wonderful. However, they're gay, so the school doesn't like it. And yeah, that's something I... It's 2019. Why do they care? It infuriates me.
Yeah, it's been a pushback. They're pushing back against the acceptance of homosexuality in the regular social construct around them, and so they do everything they can to say no, that's bad.
This astronaut has no ill will, it seems, towards
no.
her Catholic alma maters, right? Either Cataldo or Gonzaga Prep. And both of those are Catholic institutions. They're grade school and high school. While she was on the ISS, she had a T-shirt underneath her uniform that was the bull pups, right? So Gonzaga, the university, is the
yeah.
bulldogs. So the prep school, the high school that goes along at the same campus, is the bull pups. Very cute, you know, and very typical within Jesuit institutions, which Gonzaga
right.
is. And so when you have this person that's totally willing and excited to say, hey, this is a place where I grew up. I feel connected to this community. I even feel connected with my Catholic institution, despite the Catholic doctrine saying that my life is an abomination, despite the individual saying that that all of these things are terrible and sinful. She's willing to go and talk to kids and stoke them up for doing something in the sciences. What an incredible role model these children are going to be missing out on. She could have even said, now I would have protested if they had said, yeah, we'll bring the kids over, just don't mention being gay.
Why would she need to do that in the first place?
Here's the thing. Did she ever say that in her
yeah.
February, you
no.
know, video chat from ISS with the kids?
I know every time I get in front of a crowd to talk to them, I'm like, by the way, I am heterosexual. I hope that's okay with everyone.
You know, I think we ought to start doing that. You know, hello, welcome to Ask an Atheist, where I'm your host, Becky Friedman, a heterosexual.
But then again, there are going to be a lot of people who will take that seriously, and then there are going to be people like anti-LGBT people who are going to like, hi, my name is Jim Smith, and I am heterosexual.
That's the thing, that when a lot of folks will see homosexual, they only see three letters in the middle of that word.
Yeah.
They don't see that this is a woman who is an entire person who has studied and persevered, who has co-parented someone, who has held many different jobs, who started at a community college. I mean, when you look at different pathways to fulfilling your dreams, even just having someone that starts at a community college say, yeah, you can get to be a spacewalker. That's an incredible point of entry into something. I mean, having taught middle school and high school for so many years, I could just think of so many questions that open Q&A would generate that would have nothing to do with her LGBTQ status.
But what about any children who may be attending that school who are LGBT and may or may not be out, how they might feel when they learn that this really wonderful person who is going to, you know, teach us what we need to do in order to achieve top status have basically been run out of town on a rail for being gay.
That's a really good yeah. point, Nick, that it has this chilling effect on any kids within all of these different institutions to say, hey, you can achieve and accomplish the most amazing things, but we're going to reject you just because you are partnered with someone of the
yep.
same gender.
You can be the most elite trained pilot in the entire country, in the entire world, but, you know, you're gay, so.
I encourage everyone to check out Anne McClain because She's got this really incredible series of just travels through her education and work history that are really quite impressive. And it's just it's super cool. So I did say that we were going local. I know that last week, Josh and Dave and Sam definitely situated themselves in Eastern Washington. So I'm stealing a little bit of their thunder talking about Spokane. But I want to go more to your stomping grounds, Luke.
Oh,
yeah. Yay. The Kitsap Rescue Mission is struggling to raise funds to reopen and sustain an overnight homeless shelter after passing on an opportunity to partake in use of up to $120,000 in grant funding. Bremerton's Mayor Greg Wheeler had planned to allocate the remainder of federal housing and urban development dollars to the mission, which ran the county's only year-round overnight shelter in the area. But federal anti-discrimination rules prevented the mission from being a recipient unless it changed its internal employment practice policies. The mission was forced to shutter overnight operations in October due to non-compliance with fire safety code, and individuals seeking shelter had been referred to the Salvation Army, another religious organization. The mission issued a statement that it would remain important for them to be able to consider faith as a component of hiring because faith is what motivates them to show up and is the reason to love people. This is really getting under my skin, guys.
Well, I mean, all love comes from God, as you know.
Well, that's what this one seems to be saying, right? If I'm not allowed to be able to say I only want to hire people based on them being our flavor of Christian, I don't think that if you're not our flavor of Christian, you can actually love people.
Right. So this is the whole thing just has been driving me crazy for like a month and a half. They have access to all the funding they need. Their problems are minor. They need to get some fire sprinklers in the overnight stay area, and they only have space for like 29 people in the first place, which is horrendous considering the population of Kitsap County. It just drives me crazy. But instead of taking that money to fix the thing that would take, you know, a couple weeks to fix, they say, no, we're just going to shut down instead.
Well, and shutting down is saying it is more important for us to hold fast to our belief that you can't love people unless you're Christian.
Right.
Than to actually love people by sheltering them at night. How many sub 32 degree nights have we had?
Oh, a few.
Since last year? I mean, I think that we've had to make sure that our cars were defrosted at least maybe six times this fall so far.
Oh, lately, I've had to do that like probably every other day.
And so when you look at someone saying, no, we'd rather shutter our doors. Oh, by the way, we're just going to go next door and use the Salvation Army,
right,
which also can't accept funds, right?
Yep, can't do that either. They have people out right now trying to get money because they can't accept federal funds.
And
or no, they won't accept federal funds because
they won't.
Because that would, you know, oh, you have to treat LGBT people and atheists like actual people? Oh, no, we can't do that.
And the Salvation Army says in their mission and all their things, they do the most good without discrimination, right? But here's the thing. When you say our hiring practices are such that we want to make sure that you are not engaged in a same-sex relationship, right? We want to make sure that you are our flavor of Christian. We want to make sure that you will subscribe to our mission of preaching the gospel. That is discriminatory. That is saying that we're not able to do the most good merely because we're atheists. So while a gay atheist, right, or a lesbian Hindu woman may be able to receive services from the Salvation Army, that does not mean that your institution is non-discriminatory. And if those individuals can receive services through the Salvation Army, yet they are forced to listen to preaching, that also is not discriminatory.
Well, I have heard firsthand stories from people who have stayed at Salvation Army locations who have been overtly shunned and even denied services because they didn't want to toe the line.
We've had some issues in Bremerton with the Salvation Army, too. Similar issues. I don't think it's been quite that bad, but lots of excessive preaching in order to get food. It's blech.
Well, here's also the thing. Salvation Army says that their mission is an international movement. It's an evangelical part of the Universal Christian Church. Its message is based on the Bible. How many things are found in the Bible that are discriminatory? Loads and loads and loads. And if your message is based in the Bible and you say we do this without discrimination, the Bible instructs us to not only discriminate, but to kill people based on their particular tribe or affiliation or past actions and behaviors. Even instructs you to kill people based on the individual's motivations and thoughts. I mean, how can you say that you're based on the Bible, yet also we don't discriminate? I mean, unless you're explicitly throwing out parts of your Bible.
That kind of argument would be where my mom, my religious mother would have said, kind of jokingly, but I'm not really sure, you're not supposed to think about that.
Right. Yeah, no.
The end of the mission says, the mission is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and to meet human needs in his name without discrimination. What this really belies to me is that folks that are aligned with things like the rescue mission and Salvation Army is that they believe that having Jesus in your life is a basic human need. And when they are providing these moments of preaching and sharing the word, they're saying we are feeding your soul.
Right. And that's literally what they think. Why do we need that?
And if we believe that that's not part of our human need is, it is 31 degrees outside and I would like to sleep in a sheltered environment.
I would like to be warm and dry. And that brings up a whole nother point. In the Kitsap County area, this is the only shelter. There aren't any others. There are no other overnight shelters. There is no place to go except for your car or the alley behind a bar to stay warm.
If you're fortunate enough to have access to any of those.
Right.
And so we're looking at, in addition to all the things that are going on in major cities all around the country, in addition to what's in Seattle, what's in Olympia, what's in Tacoma, what's in Pierce County, we're looking at a lot of unsheltered people and unhoused people.
Right.
And we're looking at that at a cold, damp, rainy time of the year. And to say, hey, we want to make sure that we can continue to love people, so we must hire people that are Christian. What is more loving, to say we're going to eschew money and not be able to house people, or to say, you know what, we're going to set aside our hiring practices and change those policies, adopt a non-discrimination statute in our own internal policies, accept this money, spiff up our shelter, be able to legally, safely house these people, maybe expand it, maybe expand your services. What seems more loving to you guys?
That shows exactly where their priorities lie. It's not, they don't care about housing people or helping people. They want to proselytize.
It's all about converting the homeless to Jesus so they can live a proper life. Because obviously that's probably what's lacking in their lives. It's not their underlying mental illness or drug problems or just the lack of ability to pay rent in a county that is incredibly difficult to get rent, get an apartment in. It's Jesus.
If you're needing to reach out in Jesus's name and you say that's going to actually sustain you, yeah, tell that to the person that through no fault of their own had a rent hike and their roommate was deployed.
Right.
And their spouse broke up with them. Right. And you've got three kids. I mean, when you have at this time a lot of places that are seeking donations, right? We're looking at the bell ringers for Salvation Army all the time. I'm getting solicitations for end of year things, starting to get that, you know, the end of the tax years,
yep.
You know, do your donations so you can do your tax write-offs for the year 2019. We're starting to look at that. What are the things that motivate us as atheists and humanists to say, hey, I want to look with a little bit more scrutiny about where I give that money? Is it really doing the most good when it comes with strings attached?
Well, there are tons of places where there are tons of resources where, like, charity watchdogs and places that compile data and look into these companies and what are their motivations, what do they actually do, what is their overhead, and, you know, they have rating systems. And I, around this time of year especially, I make sure before I even give two thin dimes, I make sure that they're vetted.
Over in Kitsap Atheists, we've actually just been helping put together lunches for people.
What? But you don't have the love of God in your heart to do that? How could you possibly be motivated to do that, Lou?
it must be some sort of thing that got into me. I don't know. No, it's the right thing to do.
Oh, okay. All right. So, like,
people are hungry.
altruistic compassion for your fellow man that comes without any belief in Jesus.
Weird.
Well, you see, might that actually just be the spark of Jesus speaking through you?
Stop giving them ideas, Nick. Yeah, when you come from a perspective that says that faith motivates you to show up, and faith motivates you, or faith is the reason that you love people, it presumes that those who don't have faith don't have a reason to love people. And newsflash, we do! Right? We have all of those things that say, hey, I want to give back, or I want to help people be in a more fortunate position because I have empathy and sympathy. It's because I've experienced this personally, or because someone I know close to me has experienced this personally. All of those things don't require a belief in the supernatural.
Well, in fact, probably the kindest, most generous, most thoughtful and empathetic people I have ever known are non-religious.
It may be. I mean, you may have individuals that are religious that are kindest and most empathetic and most compassionate. I would venture to say that it's not because of your faith. I would say that you are a good person, and that because you were inculcated into this faith, that's the anchor that you use to help you and help remind you of your commitments. And I've got no quarrel with someone that says, you know what? I think that I'm going to work with my church group to pack, hygiene bags for unsheltered individuals. I have no quarrel with someone that says, I want to work with my temple youth group in order to plant lots of trees along the riverbed where we've had wetlands being dislocated and relocated. That does not move me
That's
to criticize.
Good.
It's when you say that it is because I am a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim that I do this, and anyone who isn't that means that you can't do this. It's when it gets absurd.
But I can.
We can. We do. There's organizations literally called Atheists Helping the Homeless. I think every month, if you just put into an internet search in a lot of different news aggregators, atheists and homelessness or homeless, you will see loads and loads of groups like Luke's, like, what is it, Kitsap?
Kitsap Atheists and Agnostics.
Yeah, getting together and saying, hey, we're gonna pack food bags, or we're going to do hygiene bags. We've seen them in Everett. We've seen them in Seattle. We've seen them in Tacoma. We've seen them in Kitsap. We've seen them all around the country and the world. You don't have to have that Jesus belief to have your reason to love your fellow human.
And there are still a lot of people who will stay the tired old line of, oh, where are the atheist charities? There are tons of
them.
There's
a bunch of them.
You just have not bothered to seek them out.
Here's the other thing. You might say, well, Salvation Army is something that helps you get food and housing when you can't. And so we should do that because it's going to help people. I'm a public school teacher. I work in districts and in schools where more than 50% of our children come from high poverty. We have at any given time, between 2 and 10% of our students that are experiencing homelessness. We've got a pantry. We've got a community student pantry through some of our community connections and liaisons at our school. I'm an atheist. I can say, you know what? I'm going to donate to this organization that's completely secular, so that when my students on Wednesday afternoon go home for a long weekend where they don't have access to free breakfast and free lunch through our school nutrition services, they've got a box for the entire family for that long weekend. And you know what? I, Rebecca, as an atheist, have just donated to a non-religious organization to get kids food.
Nice.
And it wasn't through an atheist charity. It just happened to be an atheist giving to a charity that doesn't have to do with religion at all. It's non-sectarian. It has no position on religion. And it works with the schools, so it necessarily must have no position with religion.
And also, you're doing it because it's the right thing to do. You're not doing it to try and cash in chips with an omnipotent sky being.
I think she'll get into heaven easier that way.
Well,
you think unbeknownst to me,
yes.
I'm racking up my good place points. So this actually brings us to a good question from Randy from Orlando. He writes, I feel like I'm being torn in so many directions. What's important? What's not? Oh, and Randy, this is a huge question, but our topic of discussion reminded me of your question, because when you say what's important around this time of year, we're being pulled to donate and give and engage and talk and send and receive in so many different ways. But there's a lot of other things that your question brings up. Luke, what does Randy's question sort of mean to you?
Well, I mean, if you're going for a general, like, what is the meaning of everything, that's a really difficult question to answer. What direction you want to go with your life and things like that, that's something that I don't think I can actually answer that specifically.
We need a little bit more information, Randy, if we want to do that. But do you feel that pull of so many different priorities? I mean, at this stage in your life, do you feel these beck and calls from different ways that you could engage with the world and have trouble prioritizing?
That's definitely an issue. I'm running the atheist groups over in Kidsap. I've got a kid that just moved out, and I'm watching his puppy during the day. I'm taking care of my house. I'm trying to make sure people have food out in the city streets of Bremerton. There's a lot of stuff going on. And then I have to go to work every day, too.
Oh, yeah, just that little thing,
that little
right?
thing, too.
So I think you've shown what in your mind is important, because your day is packed. You have a lot to do.
Yeah.
And you still make time for other things that are more important.
Right.
You're not spending all your time playing skee ball.
No, I got to go to a local music show. I've got to make sure my other kid has money for food. There's so much stuff.
Well, and recreation is important.
But what is important outside of those things, though? I think that probably comes up in here. Which direction, what is important in the world in general?
Well, not only that, but you can decide what is most important for the world, or what's most important for you, or what's most important for people who are in your milieu. It is a very complicated question that can really only be answered with and forgive my term, I have no other word for this other than soul searching.
Okay.
A lot of introspection.
Introspection works very well.
Yes. Sometimes it's just
you do have another word for it, turns out, Nick.
Yeah, I had to come up with it after I already said it. But this is the kind of thing that you really have to decide for yourself. I cannot decide what your priorities are. I just hope that your priorities make the world a better place, which I trust they will, because I believe most people are good.
I think that that's a very humanistic and humane way of looking at it as well. One of the things that brings up for me is, I think that for a long time there was a lot of participation in a specific kind of like niche, right? You had either your clubs or your organizations that you really felt connected to. And we as atheists, we had a lot of things like American Atheists and American Human Association and Foundation Beyond Belief and Camp Quest and these amazing groups doing cool things. And then we had a major political shift and economic shift in our country between the recession in, you know, around 2009, then followed by the transition to a Donald Trump presidency. Many people that are drawn to humanism are, I would imagine, drawn against many of the policies of Donald Trump, or the practices, or even just the man, or his rhetoric, or his way of being, or general visage. I could go on. And so there's a little bit of like fatigue. There's activism fatigue. There's giving fatigue. And we see that financial contributions to different prioritized organizations have, you know, have dropped off or stepped up. When you see something so egregious to your core values as children being separated and thrown into dog cages in warehouses, you might reprioritize and shuffle what's important and what's not important in your life.
Right. And then you have to worry about where you get your information from, which news source is going to be the real news source, which is going to be the quote fake news.
Ooh, that's a really good point, too. So there's a lot of stressors that can happen when you have an economic and political shift. And while I do believe in the, yes, it's something that has to be done on your own with introspection and soul searching, for lack of a better word, like introspection, then
thank you.
Sometimes you can gather information from others, just listen to how others prioritize, because it might spark some other kind of different perspective. So, Randy from Orlando, I really wish you the best. I'm not sure what kind of soul searching you're needing to be doing and what kind of things are pulling you in many directions. Maybe you'll experience a pancreatic kitty miracle. Who knows? You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Except with me and Becky and Nick and Luke this week. And we'll be back after the break. Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. Staying local in Washington State, a pastor based out of multiple Skagit County area congregations has admitted to pocketing funds meant for victims of Washington's 2014 Oso landslide that killed 43 people. Gary Joseph Ray pled guilty to 3 counts of first-degree theft with aggravating circumstances on November 12th, before his case was set to go to trial. Ray admitted that he had used his position of trust to facilitate theft of $40,000 in donations from a California church destined for affected families, $5,000 from Restoration Church Camino in Camino Island, and more than $10,000 from Oso Community Chapel. Although this level of crime typically results in a 3-month jail sentence, Island County prosecutors stand poised to recommend a year-long prison sentence at his February hearing. Ray's plea agreement also includes mandatory restitution to the victims to the tune of $152,000.
So, obviously, he did this to buy love.
Yeah. Oh, buy love.
The love of Jesus.
Yes, because...
So he could distribute to the people of Skagit County.
That's the reason that he shows up, right?
Right.
Oh, you bring up, you know, the obvious point here, Luke, that just because you are a pastor does not necessarily and inherently mean that you are doing things for transparent and ethical purposes.
In fact, I would say anybody that's drawn to that position with any great strength probably isn't doing it out of the good of their own heart.
I don't know. I almost became a rabbi.
Not everybody. But I've run across more pastors that are really just not nice people.
Well, it's in a position of power where you get to oversee things
right.
like budgets and things like that. And there's literally a lot of trust that's placed in you and less scrutiny. So with a lot of trust and little scrutiny and pressures of society,
right.
I imagine it can be a very easy and tempting thing to say, hey, I'll just divert some of these funds. But with this guy, in his plea, he admitted that he had no intention of ever using these. He wasn't just skimming a little off in order to...
Right, this wasn't a cheeseburger.
Know. No, this was not a cheeseburger. This wasn't to help himself make rent or to pay off the medical bill of a congregant. This was, I collected funds for people that were devastated by a town-wrecking natural disaster, and I set those up with the intention of skimming all that money and profiting from it. And to me, that's unforgivable. I don't know that $152,000 in restitution really restitutes. What do you think, Nick?
I'm at a loss for words. This is the worst kind of person. This is like what you were saying. Literally, the entire town of Oso was destroyed, and his motivation from the beginning was to not only take the money from the people that could have benefited from these kinds of funds, but also to exploit the empathy of the people who were donating.
Yeah,
this is an absolutely horrible human being.
This was a con man that took advantage of people in a time of tragedy to enrich himself.
Yeah.
So, kids, as you're looking for where you're going to square your donations at the this holiday time of year at the end of tax year 2019, yeah, I mean, it really points to we need to look with scrutiny to our leaders, even when and even because we think highly of them, because there deserves to be a level of transparency in what's going on when you are giving of yourself and of your finances. Now, not everything is so peachy keen for humanists and atheists and non-religious people around the world, because an updated report issued by Humanists International details how in more than 70 nations, non-religious individuals face a series of curtailed rights or existential threats. The 2019 Freedom of Thought report shows many nations retain anti-blasphemy laws, with some penalties actually becoming more harsh, despite 8 countries having abolished them in the past 5 years. Corporal and capital punishment, mob violence, incarceration, and extrajudicial violence for alleged blasphemy and apostasy are especially likely in the nations of Pakistan, Mauritania, Saudi Arabia, Brunei, Iran, Indonesia, and Bangladesh. Italy, India, and Spain have also increased enforcement of their anti-blasphemy codes in the past several years, though punishments are typically less severe and mostly consist of civil fines.
So, Nick, were you raised religious like me?
I was, but I was raised in a very progressive church.
Okay.
So
I wasn't so much. How's the apostasy treating you these days?
You know, the first person that I actually came out to as an atheist was my minister, and he responded with one sentence that was essentially, "Oh, you're a good person. I've known you since you were a little kid. Oh, and your mother tells me that you've been getting into the Beatles lately." Literally, it's just that quick. That's the kind of church I grew up in.
Nice.
I had no idea that fundamentalism was a thing until I was in my, well, into my teenage years.
Well, it's not so lucky for, you know, millions of folks, and not just atheists and humanists, but that apostasy that you mentioned is not just saying I'm an atheist. It's saying I leave or disregard and reject the beliefs of my natal religion, right?
In countries that are primarily Islamic, that is a big deal.
It is. And then even in pluralistic countries where there are people of multiple faiths that are permitted to reside, you can still have apostasy that's illegal, right? You can still say, all right, if you're a Catholic and registered as a Catholic and you want to convert, can do. You are listed as a Catholic on our government registers. And there's complexities that go along with all of those things. I do like that Humanist International is putting out something that's the Freedom of Thought report, because it's not about the freedom to be an atheist and the freedom to be a humanist, because I, as a humanist, am motivated to say, you know what? I don't want to dictate to everyone that they should not believe in a God. I want to be able to say these are the aspirations that I strive for as a human. But like I said, I've got no quarrel if you're motivated by your religion to do good and it actually helps improve the human condition and the world and the environment around us, and those connections between people. The freedom of thought is more than just either freedom to be your religious self or the freedom to be an atheist. It's the freedom to be a true, authentic person that through introspection or soul searching, you verify what your beliefs are, what your philosophy is, what your cosmology is, and that you're able to critically inquire, is the thing that my family says true and my culture and community, is that the thing that makes the most sense to me? Can I utilize reason and logic to examine that? Do I feel comfortable saying I have faith in this? And as a person of faith, this is something I take where I don't look at critically, but I also am science minded. And so I accept things like getting the flu shot every year and eating balanced nutrition and environmental stewardship in ways that keep our earth healthy. Right. So when we look at freedom of thought and we see that there's actually a really cool interactive map that like you can look at, and it's kind of color coded, and there are countries that are surprising that show up on there. I mean, when we look at Italy and Spain, you think, oh, it's all modern, progressive. I mean, Spain had same-sex marriage that was permissible well before the U.S. did, yet you still can't insult the Virgin Mary? You're still subjected to monetary fines for doing that? Right. What kind of freedom of thought is that?
Restrictions on art because of potential offense to religious people. Ireland just dropped their blasphemy laws recently, and that's a huge deal.
Yeah, that's one of the 8 countries that have really relaxed those or dropped them altogether and recognized that, you know what, it does not behoove us to try and enforce a belief that hews to the Catholic Church's teachings. And, you know, Ireland, I think, has really pushed losing a lot of ground for the Vatican in that tiny little country. And that's something that's so surprising to me as someone who grew up of mixed heritage, part of which was Irish, and knowing and hearing and looking at the Protestant versus Catholic, a strife and violence that really pervaded a lot of Northern Ireland. And looking at both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland and seeing, you know what? We've had enough of the Vatican getting into our politics, our lives, messing up our people, committing egregious acts against whole classes of people just based on their gender or their religion. We've had enough of of priests that were preying upon young people and sexually abusing them. We've had enough of Catholic institutions warehousing mentally ill individuals or impoverished teen mothers. We've had enough of that. And seeing that renaissance in Ireland has been really gratifying, I think. And it really would have surprised a me of 20 or 30 years ago.
It kind of surprises me now still.
Yeah. So we still want to be able to keep an eye on these. I mean, as long as Ask an Atheist has been a show, we've been looking at blasphemy. And you say, well, it's not that bad if someone has to pay a fine. But it's in the same category as someone who receives 1,000 lashes. It's in the same category of someone who is subjected to mob violence because they dared to publish works from a poet that questioned whether, you know, Muhammad is the prophet. And those are the things that we want to, as we enjoy our rights to broadcast on terrestrial radio and to release things as podcasts, as Atheists and Humanists, we want to keep an eye on where do people not have that privilege and where do people not have that right? Because it's really important. And I don't think that it will be going away as long as Ask an Atheist is here. I want to bring up an email or feedback from someone who calls themselves Tacoma Atheist 73. And they write, "For as long as I can remember, I've been skeptical of what Christians say about the Bible and the events that took place throughout the Bible. I grew up in a secular humanist household. We didn't attend church when I was a boy. Oh, I have family members who did attend church and would often try to get me to join and to accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Try as I might, I never could. I've always wondered why I would need him to do good in society." And Tacoma Atheist 73, I think you've really hit the nail on the head on this one. Why do we need a higher power in order to do good in society?
I think you already know that the answer.
I think
you don't.
You don't know the answer?
No,
you don't need it.
You don't need it.
Yeah.
You don't need it. So this the beginning of this, when I was raised, Lutheran. My dad's side of the family was sort of an evangelical Presbyterian. And when they started talking about how dinosaurs, the reason we find dinosaurs in large groups was because the people before the flood kept them in zoos, I was like, wait.
Oh dear.
Come again?
Yes. No, this, so I was a Missouri Synod Lutheran, which is a more conservative, borderline evangelical Lutheran church. And yeah, that was what they taught us in Sunday school.
That's amazingly quaint and sweet.
And so when that happened, I was like, I was probably 10. I'm like, that's not right, but I'm not going to say anything because I know that's not going to go well for me. So maybe I'll just move away.
Well, I want to bring this actually to the last thing I want to touch on today, where lawmakers in Ohio's House of Representatives passed a bill that would seem to bar teachers from academically penalizing students for schoolwork that is scientifically inaccurate if the answers are based on students' religious convictions. Republican representatives unanimously voted in favor of the Student Religious Liberties Act, which mandates that students submitting religiously colored answers be graded on substance and relevance using ordinary academic standards. The proposed law also eliminates a section of state code that allows for limiting a student's religious expression, including distribution of religious literature to lunch periods and non-instructional time periods when students are free to associate. The bill is now in the hands of the Republican-controlled state Senate. And the reason that I wanted to bring this one up is because it is being described in both mainstream media and social media and blogs and whatnot as, oh my goodness, kids in Ohio will be able to say that dinosaurs were kept in zoos before the flood, and then
right,
that's why we find them in all big bone piles together, right? And that a science teacher cannot mark them wrong. That's not what this bill is about.
It's really easy to get around that just by phrasing your test questions correctly.
Right. So here's the thing. We already have, through long-standing case law, the ability for a student to say on free choice assignments, like, read a free choice book to go sit down and read Timothy, right? We have already the rights of students who said, okay, you know what? In art class, we are learning pointillism. I want you to use the pointillism technique to draw whatever you want to do. And you say, I want to do Jesus on the cross through a pointillistic style. Great. You cannot grade a kid poorly because the subject of his art happened to be Jesus, as long as it's of relevance and substance.
Right.
And it's on ordinary standards for common schools. This is not about saying that you get to mark that the earth was created in 6 days in your earth science class. The thing that is insidious about this bill is, one, it's portraying as if students don't already have that right, and they do. But the little sneaky bit that we should be focusing on is the part that says, hey, you get to do your religious activities, you get to express yourself religiously and distribute your religious literature at lunchtimes and at before school and during passing periods and at your after-school clubs. Now they say it's not restricted to just those times.
So, wait, instead of passing notes, they're going to be passing Bibles around in class?
Well, yeah, Luke, come on. Nobody passes notes anymore. We text each other and snap
right.
it.
Sorry. I'm dating myself pretty badly.
So, but here's the thing that is serious. We have this ability for students to have their gather at the flagpole before the first bell and have their prayer circles at lunchtime and have their Bible studies as part of their incorporated student groups, just like any other group gets to meet on campus. This is now saying that Ohio schools are not allowed to just restrict it to those times. This is saying that kids can express themselves religiously at any time at school, which means that a kid, maybe they can't get marked, they don't get full credit when they say Earth was created by God in 6 days on their Earth science test. They can sure as heck stand up and declare and disrupt the science class saying God created the earth in 6 days. And this is the thing that we need to be focusing on, not the absurd circumstance where a bio teacher or an earth science teacher is going to be stuck giving 100% A+ to a kid that is spouting off Bible.
Well, and on top of that, I'm guessing they're probably going to try to change curriculum too, which they've been doing pretty dramatically. So moving more creation-based stuff into their science programs and things like that.
That is a totally fair point, that once you say, hey, it has to be of relevance and substance, and it has to be based on the ordinary standards
right.
for the course, it's just a quick little blip to say, let's redraft what those ordinary standards are for those courses. Hey, Luke, Nick, thank you guys so much for joining me. Thank you for listening to our miracle edition of the Self-Healing Pancreas with our little kitty, Mr. Adventure.
Meow.
You can find all our episodes at atheist.radio. Find us on Twitter at AskAnAtheistWA and Facebook at the same place. Leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. Please be good during Thanksgiving. Fight for what's right and hope you survive.
Oh. All righty, ready? Kitten. It's Miracle Kitty!
Hi, Mr. Adventure.